Electronic environment for me, and the different I didn't bring my Marconi passport with me, so I'm oh, what's going on? Bob, I'm having some trouble with your mic here. Oh, Mike, we're having trouble with the mic. It was changed? Oh, there we go.
How'd I go, Mike?
There we go.
I'm gone.
Sorry. You know, you leave for a couple of years and they change the mics on you.
So nothing's been broadcast yet? We going to start over again?
Just me. You were sort of sub. We got the tape on. You were sub-vocalizing.
Yeah, I
was
wondering what that hiss was.
Yeah.
So, Doug, it's a pleasure to have another person. But I want to say that, Doug, you are a sub-genius. If anybody, and I've known you for several years, you are a sub-genius. But I'd like you to tell the people how you must have been surprised to find out that I was Bob Dobbs. You knew me as my understudy.
Yes, I did.
And we had a special relationship, a spark. You didn't know that I regarded you as a sub-genius. I performed with you several times as Bob Marshall.
We have rocked the house on numerous occasions.
Yeah, you and Dave Neufeld. And Dave Fanning wasn't there, but we'll explain that later.
Yeah, we all know where Dave Fanning was.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing is that, give a little reason why you're not surprised that I am Bob Dobbs when you found out.
It's, it all sort of, everything fit into place, Bob. You know, up until then, there have been a lot of synchronistic happenings.
Yeah.
But once I heard that you were the Bob Dobbs, and,
a narrative fell in place.
Yeah, there was a hidden narrative, a thread of linear thought.
That wasn't quite implied up to that point.
Well, implied by only non-linear non-sequiturs.
Yeah, so that's about all. Should we go on to some new topics? I'm sure you've got some questions that you'd like to ask me in this situation. Like you're saying you don't have your Marconi passport, but you don't need it because you're a sub-genius when you're on the air with me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so lay me down a question, Doug. You know, I like questions. They evoke the poetry of instant theater and response.
Questions, Bob.
Be tough on me.
Where does unemployment fit into the situation today?
Well, of course, Bob Dole is taking advantage of that, eh? And he knows everybody is on the dole, corporations and private individuals, so he's hoiked up his own name as a potential image that we could all identify with, because the whole world, the global theater, is on the dole, right? But where is unemployment? Well, unemployment does not exist anymore. Because, now listen to that noise in the background, eh? You remember this in the old days of Bob Marshall, when he'd be on and they'd be taping stuff and ramming through stuff. They didn't know the significance of Bob Marshall's attempt and victory to knock out the Reagan administration, in which he was successful. Anyways, it seems to have calmed down. But unemployment, see, that comes from the old 19th century bias of the division between work and idleness, or the time you're not working. But today, the global participant has a sense of involvement where all his senses are electronically attuned, whether he's aware of it or not, where his work becomes his hobby and his hobby becomes his work. So the old division between work and play no longer dominates as a pattern. What we have is the cliche pattern of the artist, where the artist is so involved in his work that he's at leisure while working. Not that an artist in the old sense is a craftsman, a master of the fine arts. Everybody's an artist today, just because we're actors in the global theater and because every activity is important. For example, right now there's a demonstration going on, all right, against the U.S. Embassy, right at this moment.
Right? As we speak on University Avenue.
Now we have many so-called unemployed people and employed people mixing it up on either side, the cops and the protesters, right? Now, every one of those functions are artists. The protesters are artists. The cops are artists. And the media on the side making the replays for tonight are artists. All right? All because they are subsumed in the electric environment to the character of information. Everybody becomes the character of information. In other words, doing is not work. Thinking is work. And doing becomes meditative. And doing becomes metaphysical. So thinking and doing merge because it's subsumed into the informational nature of our electric environment. All right? So what you have, Bob himself, me, at this point, is out there working with the protesters. I'm working with the cops at the same time, and I'm working with the media. And then I'm working for myself as a fourth part. So you have the trinity, the media, the dualistic forces of cops versus protesters, and the ground of the U.S. Embassy, and Bob surrounding it. So I'm helping everybody. I'm helping the cops kick the shit out of those protesters. I'm helping the protesters to duck the beatings and the responses to various protest bureaucrats that are, leading them on to various points that Dave Barbarash explained today on Newswave. It was a very valid point he brought up about the way to have a free protest. Well, Bob's helping the protesters deflect and jujitsu and judo and duck the idiot violence. But I'm also there with the cops heaping out the violence because there are pinks everywhere on all sides. And then I'm also fooling around with the media. So that's an example of being employed. All right? So nobody's unemployed. This is the glorious truth of the moment, Doug. This is what insight that Bob is your personal short-term savior can offer you tonight.
Just short-term savior? Bob is only a short-term savior?
How'd it go? See, that's Reverend Stang's, pink influence dogma, right? He talks about me in his propaganda tapes about me being a short-term personal savior. Wrong. And you caught me on that, Doug, which is good. It shows you are a subgenius because I'm a savior from before, during, and after. I'm here all the time. I'm ready. With me, you cannot be unhappy, right? You get a bit of pain in your life, but it's just for variety, right? And you know that, Doug. I think you could testify to that.
Well, I can testify that when I've met other subgenii, there is a lightness in the room, a certain relaxing of the norms.
A continuation of the joke.
Yes. Everyone's in on the joke. You don't even have to, wink when you're in a room with some genie.
That's right. The joke is the consciousness itself, right? That's what the joke is.
Yeah, you throw some runes and you...
I Ching, you mean? You're talking I Ching stuff? Yeah, and you play a few records and...
runes and tunes?
And then you study. You study the effects. You're never fully there.
And you can study... There's no certain book that you have to study, is there?
Oh, no.
You read the book.
Knowing that when someone asks you if you've read a book, you just say, yeah, I've read book, because it's visual space, right? And you know what it does to your eyes and your senses, the phonetic alphabet amplified by printed page. And so if you know the effect, that's right, the content's irrelevant. Doug, you're a good substitute for Mike. You know how to work this good. You're bringing new aspects out of me. Ah, Dougie. Another, see, you asked me a question. Look at the dogma we got out. Now, give me another one.
Another question, okay. Well, I had another question, and you already answered it, about the artist, because we talked once with the incarnation of Bob Marshall about how the everyday man is the artist, and it's only the people who can bring all the media together who are the geniuses.
Right, the ones who control the information patterns, the huge patterns we're all subjected to in the information environment. That's Bill Casey and the guy behind the scenes. The intelligence agencies are running, they're the Shakespeares of today. But we can, they're pink Shakespeares. But if you're with Bob, you can bypass the manipulation of the global theater and work in an incredible play and be participating in Bob's incredible play, which sometimes is secretly referred to as hand signals for the blind, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is appropriate for the radio medium. But yes, you have to know who your competition is. You have to know who's directing the real play. That's why nobody can get any funding anymore in the traditional arts, because the arts, they're obsolete. And by obsolete, I mean they are not disappearing. There's going to be more and more people involved in the arts, because if they're obsolete, they work. It's an old business corporate maxim. If it works, it's obsolete. Obsolescence means a prominence. Everybody's into it. But the hidden ground is where the real art is, and where the constitutive matrix of form, which the artist, the quiddity of the moment, which the artist is aware of, that is the real art, to be defining and projecting the mood and effects of that situation. In other words, the capital P present, not the pink present, the present. The present is what the artist, and it can be a being in any role in life, is aware of what's obsolete and what's ground. What's obsolete is figure, is predominant, all right? So the traditional arts, now what's interesting is that's why, if everybody's going to be an artist in the traditional sense, why is there no funding for it? Because the pattern I just elucidated was the pattern for the last 50 years. But right now, with software taking over from totally sponging up visual space and hardware, there's no money to go around. So we either get the mark of the pink on you to even get any funding, and that's in the future, or you're with Bob. But see, Bob has alternative means of funding. And I'm going to talk about that later after the tape, about the incredible forces that are beyond not just the Gnostic matter-spirit bias split, the matter-spirit split bias, but being part of matter and drinking it in and being sustained by it. In other words, I'm covering a lot of territory right now, Doug.
I know. We're going through.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to sort of, it's like a buffet table here. You just got to pick out what you... Yeah. Like a Bruce Elder film, you pick out, you know, certain elements that intrigue you. You mull them over. Meanwhile, Bob Dobbs is going on, and then you clue in after you've had your little think session, catch another phrase, and
great.
Proceed.
Because you know Bob's going to be replaying the pattern.
Bob is user friendly.
Yeah, that's right. Well, particularly subgenii friendly.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to play, what time is it? 6. Is it 22?
Quarter to.
Oh, yeah, we better play the tape. Maybe you can play your music after, but as background. But
I was going to play my music as background. We've got a couple of, you know, hot, older songs that I think people, subgenii, will appreciate. They're in on the joke.
Okay, maybe you could do that while I'm doing my file release after the tape. So let's go with the Stang's obsolete tape. It works. And we can take a break.
It's the black side of the tape.
Yes.
He's a miracle, Jesus, friend. And friend, I'll tell you what, sometimes that Jesus, he'll light up his time. Yes, he'll light up his time.
R.C.G. Moore.
We'd like to say right now, we've got Bob coming up in a moment with tonight's sports.
I may not have any questions, and I can tell you right away that your slack will pick up immediately upon receipt of the small box.
Are both Dougs just up here visiting in California?
All three.
Spread the word, or all three of them?
Right. As a matter of fact, we are traveling in the country at the moment, doing what there are thousands of paying dues, paying for genius.
Dave
Batty,
could be impaled to make 7 minutes before he signed up. That's right. Now, Doug, wasn't that unique? That's Bob Singer. Goodness, they're talking about Doug today.
What's a Doug, Bob?
Doug is, that's Reverend Stang's buddy, Doug. I think his name is Doug Wellman, who used to work in the church with me, but he defected with Stang when Stang defected. And so, because Stang can't carry the complete ball himself, he has to bring in, I would never bring in another name, but he has to bring in other names and archetypalize and repeat them to create some intensity, because his own name, Ivan Stang, can't keep up the charisma, you know. So I would say that do not be identifying with the fact of using your name, but understand it is Bob's gift to you to wake and hijack what Stang is doing with Doug and make it resonate with today's show.
See, I contact us all since my first name is Bob and Doug is my second name, so Bob does come before Doug.
But you knew you couldn't use it because you had met me. It's all right, Doug. Okay, we got to get down to some matter. If you want to have some background music,
I got some background
programmer style. You know how people can't take the verbiage. All right, I'm going to read a file. This is from 1983, about early 83, at a Secret Council of 10 meeting. I was present, and you know, this question came up. One of the members, it might have been Prince Charles, might have been Turner Tyson, said, "Bob, why, when the Bigfoot is sighted, you know, those Yeti, the Bigfoot, Doug, when they're
sighted..." They had another sighting last week.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Okay. Did they talk about the incredible stench that accompanies this presence?
No, just the Bigfoot print.
Oh, okay, because there's an incredible odor. And so the council pen asked Bob, why does Bigfoot have an incredible stench when encountered? And this is what I'm reading from the files, the archive. This is what Bob answered. Bob indicated that this is a sulfur smell, this odor. He indicated that this is also referred to as the smell of fire and brimstone in the ancient writings. The brimstone being sulfur, and the fire being the heat which ignites or produces this stench from the sulfur. Bob indicated that this fire and brimstone is a purifier, that it is often used for purposes of fumigating. He indicated that this particular odor associated with this entity, Bigfoot, not Dave Fanning, is brought about through its action of transmuting itself from one dimension to another. Can you imagine that? Bigfoot, when he transmutes, creates this alchemical stench. Bob indicated that it itself, that to Bigfoot itself, it has no odor. But to those who are not used to the odor of brimstone, like Dave Fanning, the smell is that of a stench. Bob indicated that the smell, or any smell, is in actuality a frequency or vibration, just as light and sound are frequencies and vibrations within a particular range. But the eyes do not necessarily pick up, and the hearing mechanism do not necessarily pick up the smell or see what is giving off the smell. But the nose itself has a mechanism for tuning to that frequency of transmutation of interdimensional movement. Bob indicated that with certain frequencies, entities and pinks even could create artificial odors. Bob indicated that in the case of the frequencies of sulfur, or fire and brimstone combinations, the frequencies involved are those which are also associated with the MIBs, the MIBs, the men in black, and those of the Ariman forces. This is a new word for people listening to my show. Ariman, the original black Illuminati, the original progenitor of the pink prison we're victims of now. As a matter of fact, Dave Fanning was working with those Ariman forces way back there in the millennia of the dark, dismal acoustic space before visual space lit up the abyss. So Bob indicated that the Bigfoot creatures are essentially slaves or servants to these Ariman forces, these black Illuminati. However, they are not permitted to cause harm to humans, pinks, and subgeniuses, pinks included, except if directed to do so by the Ariman forces. Bob indicates that the Yeti or the Bigfoot types are karmically bound as slaves to the Ariman forces for activities in their past. And this is not in the file, but one of the activities was those entities, those pinks who blew up Atlantis and blew up Maldek before that planet, you know, that Kepler predicted was around in the elliptical discovery of orbits. Now, when these things were blown up, incredible karma, and those entities, those pinks, even some subgeniuses were reincarnated as Yeti and Bigfoot as slaves of the Ariman forces because of these activities in their past, and can only be redeemed and freed from their bondage to these Ariman forces, these pink forces, when the rest of humanity, which includes the subgenii, has risen to a high enough stage of civilization or spiritual development so as to overcome the limitations placed upon them by material bondage. In other words, when they make Bob the slack king, the slack woman, the slack queen, the slack animal, the slack ape of the coming times. In other words, when we believe, when we've actualized that moment, that mythic time zone, then the Yeti will be released from their imprisonment, their karmic enslavement, and we will be able to stand the stench. We will revel in it. Maybe that's what Marlon Brando was trying to tell us in Last Tango in Paris, in the isolated vacuum he was operating with his little Bobby girl. Remember that?
So, and the butter.
The butter.
It's high cholesterol diet.
No, butter is yellow. It's not pink. Yeah. Butter. Yellow is the other color for Bob. I used it during Christmas last year. All right, this is not bad music. I don't want to talk about the files anymore. That's enough knowledge for the day, Doug. Now, what time is it?
It's 5:59 and 21 seconds.
Oh, we got a couple of minutes there, Doug. Bring up something that you know is niggling. You've been niggling away there in your work state, daily activity, in your employment. What did you really want to say it? But say it, Doug. Ask Bob. What? Ask Bob something that you really want to know, Doug, other than you're feeling good. Why? You know why.
I'm feeling good, Bob. What do I want to ask Bob?
Come on, think back. We'll take a little pause here. The music's covering it. Just think back. What was something that, in the period when you didn't know that I was Bob, you know, what was that synchronistic niggling question? Your sexy thing, Dougie.
I don't know, Bob.
I see you now. That see when you
but
found
see, you answered one of my questions, and I answered one of my questions myself for you once.
Yeah.
That you passed on to another subgenii.
Oh, yeah.
A daughter of Bob.
I want to bring that up. I did want to bring that up to people out there, subgenii and pinks. Listen to this. Doug is special because he's had the privilege of associating with Bob and Connie's kids. Doug has worked out with Bob's. We won't give out a name at this point.
I went to RoboCop with Bob's kid.
Yeah, so, RoboCop.
And RoboDoc?
Yes, RoboDoc. Doctors for Bob. So, Doug, let's hear. Let's hope that Doug comes back again and shares his experience and knowledge he's learned and absorbed, not with the kids of Frank Zappa, but with the kids of Bob, those little twins that Connie and Bob produced way back in college days. Yes, those kids Doug went to a movie with. So, Dougie, Bob bless you, praise Doug, and let's move on with some smack-inducing music.
Sunday morning at 10 on 88.1 CKLN.
Problem there, Dougie? That's all right. Just put another promo on. Tom Gibbons is coming in. He's going to give us the rhythm. The rhythm of Wednesday, 6 to 8. That rhythm that only Tom knows how to help you get through the middle of the week. All right. Take it away.
throughout the third week in March, 88.1 CKLN and contemporary...